of making these connections in these little two-minute clips. Really love what they're doing. I could almost go ahead and say this was my idea, but I'm going to actually plagiarize their idea right from that video to talk about the state of our hearts. Now, let's put that up. Let's see this up on the screen here. We'll read this together. Read it with me, please. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Don't know why we're reading that this morning, because obviously it's addressed to Israel, is it not? It's just for Israel. What in the world does this have to do with us? Hear, O Israel. The word hear is the word. Who was here last week? Shema. The word is Shema. And the word Shema is not just the title of that specific poetic phrase. The word Shema means to hear and to respond accordingly. If I said to you, don't get too alarmed, we're sitting around, we're just talking to one another, not killing time. By the way, there's a little fire over here you want to be aware of, but don't worry about it sitting here because we're just talking, we're just killing time. But if I said, there's a fire, get out of the building. If you Shema, what I heard is that you'd get out of the building because of the fire, right? So Shema is not just, I heard it, but I heard it and I'm going to respond accordingly. So for the next few weeks, we're going to consider what it means to hear this phrase and respond accordingly. We are to love the Lord our God with all our heart. We ought to stop just for a quick second and identify what we mean by love the Lord our God. Throughout Scripture, there's this theme that says love is not the way you feel about something, but what you're willing to do about it. Jesus said it this way in the New Testament. He said, greater love has nobody for another person than that they would lay down their life for them. That you would be willing to sacrifice, that you'd be willing to give up, that you'd be willing to set aside any portion of your own life so that someone else would be blessed by it. Basically, it's this. You say you love me, you show it to me. James had the same theme in some of his writing. You say you love the Lord, then show him by what you do. So we're going to say it this way, that to love is to give up the best of myself for God. So if it's love the Lord with my heart, it's how do I give up those parts of my heart for the Lord? Let me see if you can guess who this quote came from. Listen to this. It is not yet the case that the heart is both yet the place of a noble man's deepest love for others and the weathered king's most callous hatred of the same. Even yet my inquiry remains unanswered of its complexity, and I am unable to determine the depth of which it finds its reach of both good and evil. Isn't that profound? The complexity of the human heart. I'll read it again, see if you can guess the author. Is it not yet the case the heart is both the place of the nobleman's deepest love for others and the weathered king's most callous hatred of the same? Even yet, my inquiry remains unanswered of the complexity. I'm unable to determine the depth to which it finds its reach of both good and evil. Who do you think said that? Sorry? Yeah, that was mine. Trying to make it sound like Shakespeare, I couldn't do it. Yeah, I made that up. The heart is a complex thing, is it not? Has anybody here got your whole heart figured out yet? I mean, when we say love God with all your heart, I'm not even sure what that means yet. What do you mean the whole heart? Most often when we think of the heart, the first thing that comes to mind is how I feel about something. But if you want to get real technical, I mean, let's start at the base level. What is it that your heart does for you? I don't know if you stopped to check this morning, but it's doing it right now. And as I look around, I'm pretty sure it's doing it well for all of us. There's a physical aspect to our heart, right? I mean, it literally is the organ that pumps the blood through your body. When the heart stops, you'll stop, right? That's the way it's at a very base level. The heart is a physical element to us. So there's that part of it. Probably the simplest idea of the heart is the physical part of it. And that is, without it, you would cease to do what you do. Psalm 90 says this. If only we knew the power of your anger, your wrath is as great as the fear that is due. Teach us to number our days. The phrase means this. Be aware of your time. Be cognizant of the time that God gives you. So long as your heart's beating, God's giving you time. And so how am I going to love the Lord with the physical part of my heart? I have no idea if I have to love him with my whole heart, and part of my heart is this physical nature that keeps me moving, how am I going to love the Lord with this? How about this? I'm going to love the Lord by respecting and giving him the best of my time. If love is defined as being willing to sacrifice something for someone else, then perhaps loving God with the physical part of my heart is to be aware of the time that he's given me and be ready to give it back. Of course, the physical part of my heart is just the very start. It's the easiest part to think of, but there are other parts to our heart. There is also these feelings and emotions that we have. How many of you have ever received a Valentine's card or an anniversary card that says, I love you with 50% of my heart? I love you with 51%. Honey, listen, don't worry. You've got 51% of my heart. There's nothing else that can get rid of it. Like, I love a whole bunch of other things too, but you've got the most of it. It would make no sense at all. Even if we said, listen, hon, last year you had 63% of my heart. This year you have 67. You are moving up in the world. Hallmark is not going to make any money off of that card. We don't say that. We say, I love you with all of my heart. I love you with all of my heart because I have these deep-rooted emotions and feelings. Sometimes you find yourself in a situation and you say, something about this just isn't right. I can feel it in my heart. Something's just not right. When you're deeply hurt, when there's a broken relationship, when somebody hurts your feelings, we say, I have a broken heart about that. This breaks my heart that you've said that, that you've done that. Somehow we have this idea that it was the heart that generates our feelings and emotions. A few weeks ago, we were thinking through this idea of how we deal with our anger. Now, I know better than to pick on the people in the front row, because that's why people don't sit in the front row. So if you're in the front two rows, you're probably safe. There's no pencils? Nothing. All right. So if you're in the front couple rows, you're safe. But I bet you I can generate some type of feeling this morning. I'll use the doll end. So if I just did this for the rest of the morning and I just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going, he's one of the most level-headed, easygoing guys I know, but I bet you if I kept doing this, eventually I could get a response. You have these stimuli that come into your life, and they cause certain reactions. When we were talking about dealing with our anger, we recognize that it usually starts with something happening. A poke comes into your life, an issue, a person, a word that was said, something that happens. It actually starts in the brain, and there's a stimulus that happens. But that's not where we feel it. It's not until your brain responds and causes your heart to start pumping faster and raise your adrenaline. And that's when you feel it. You feel the anger. So we know that our feelings and our emotions are very much driven by our heart. Anger and sorrow and frustration, but also, as the video pointed out, joy and happiness and celebration. To be good of heart, it feels good, doesn't it? When good things are happening, when you have reason to celebrate, you have birthday's hit and miss, you never know, right? Somebody else's birthday, yeah, those are fun. Celebrations that we do as individuals, as families, as a church family, they feel good. Well, feel, where am I, is that my head? Is that, it's not my lungs, it's a heart. It feels good in our heart to do that. If you get a chance to come out to one of our baseball games for our team, you probably won't see us win, but you'll see if us have fun. We have a good feeling about being out there, and the numbers don't always justify it, but we do anyway. Let me ask you, and you probably know this, would it be appropriate, would it be wise for us to live primarily by virtue of our feelings? No, it's a very quick answer. You're very quick on that. And yet, it would not be wise for us to live being directed by our feelings. We know it. That answer came so easy. But we do it, don't we? We do it, don't we? How often do we live generated by what I'm feeling in this moment? In fact, this moment, it was good until that was said or done, or this situation, now it's not good, now I'm going to respond to that so quickly. James 4 says it this way. James is talking specifically about why are you fighting with one another? I hear these rumors that you're fighting and there's quarreling and there's anger. And he says, here's the resolution to that. Submit yourselves to God. Resist the devil. He'll flee from you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. He then talks about intentionally capturing your feelings and changing them. Change your laughter to mourning. like, get a hold on what's happening. And then he says this. He says, humble yourselves before the Lord. This feeling that I have, this elation or this frustration, whatever it is, grab a hold of it and submit it to God. Humble yourselves before the Lord and He will lift you up. The principle is this, that maybe it's God who can hedge me in or point me in the right direction or help me to refrain from something or redirect from something. This idea that part of my heart is my feelings and my emotions, I can't deny that, but it is not the whole of my heart. In fact, do we have a whole heart yet? We have this physical, literal heart that's keeping me alive, and if it fails, that's the end of my life. But then I have this emotional, this feeling heart, and I'm very familiar with this. This part of my heart, man, it's like this. Monday, Tuesday, three times on Monday I was up, and Wednesdays are bad, and you know what this, we all know what this is like. And James says, submit this to your God. And so it would be this. We can love the Lord. Go ahead. By submitting my feelings to His discretion and His authority. I feel so frustrated, I'm going to... Wait. I feel so frustrated, God, I'm going to submit this to You. And You're going to direct how I'm going to respond to this. I feel so good about this, I'm going to... God, I just can't help but to be overjoyed. I'm going to submit it to You. The principle from James 4 is, I love the Lord my God with this part of my heart. When I submit my feelings to Him. I sometimes can't control my feelings. Some of us know what that's like. Certain stimuli, certain words, certain people, whatever, they enter my life, a reaction, whether good or bad, I can't control them, but I can stop and submit them to Him for Him to decide what to do with them. Well, there's also other parts of our heart. I love the way they phrase it. There's also the thoughts that we have. That's not typically the part of our heart or the part of our life that we would think to assign to our heart. When I talk about the thoughts that we have, usually what part of us are we referring to? Where do your thoughts happen? In your head, in your brain, right? Fascinating, they made the point that for the ancient Hebrew writers, there was no concept of brain. They didn't have the science to figure that out. So for them, thought came from the heart. Well, don't we know better today? We know now that thoughts don't come from our hearts, right? Thoughts come from our brains. So maybe they got this part wrong. This idea of the thoughts and where they come from. Except if I said to you, you're in a situation and you say, I know what the right thing to do here is. I know what I could do is maybe this, but the person is in need or this situation calls for something that I can give. I know what the right thing to do is. I know it in my heart. I don't know it in my mind. I know this thought. I know it in my heart that it's the right thing to do. And so we use that phrase because it makes sense to us. Proverbs 4, we saw it earlier today, but let me see that. Proverbs 4, 3 to 5 says this. It says that when I was younger, I was taught by my father, by my parents, to hold these things in my heart. But when I want my kids to really understand, when you want your kids to really understand, the picture in our mind is, that we want that code written on their hearts. In fact, in Deuteronomy 6, as Moses is preparing the people to step into the promised land, which the generation before them missed out on because they couldn't trust God for it, and he says to them as they're about to enter that land, remember what your God has done for you and etch it on the hearts of your children. The words he uses there is not like draw it or write it. It's take something and scribe it into it so it can't be erased. Etch it into the hearts of your children. So the writer of Proverbs says, take hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live if you put them on your heart. So an odd thing for him to say, so that he would write it. Why not on their minds? Well, he almost answers that question later on. Go ahead to the next verse. In Proverbs, the same chapter, a little later on, he says, above all else, guard your heart. Because everything else that you do comes out of your heart, the type of person you're going to be, the type of responses you're going to offer, the type of interactions you're going to have, the reputation you're going to earn with the people around you has its source from what kind of things you etch in your heart. There's always an ongoing dialogue with kids and with our family as well about what kind of things, what type of media you allow in. We're in our household, we don't particularly write this hard line of thou shalt not. We always say to our kids, be careful what you allow in, because some of what you allow in is getting etched on your heart. So be specific and be cautious and be strategic about what you allow to be etched on your heart, because Proverbs tell us that everything you are as a person has its source from what type of things got rooted in your heart. So I have these thoughts, and they don't necessarily come from my mind. They come from the root of my heart. 2 Corinthians, Paul is talking to the church about how they can counter the arguments that are made against the Christian perspective. And he says this in 2 Corinthians. He says, "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ." Paul's point, specifically in the text, was as you dialogue with people and debate the whole, this is the right way to think, this is the right way to live, this is how a person should set their mind and their heart, he says, take every thought captive, every expression, every interaction, every debate, and capture it as to whether or not it fits the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, the principle is we can do that for our same. Every thought that finds itself embedded in our heart, the question becomes, does this thought align with me as a follower of Jesus Christ? And if I can't find that tension, if I can't find the resolution to that tension, then I take captive that thought and I do with it what's appropriate at the time. Here's the conclusion to how we can do this. Loving God with our thought. Go ahead. We can love God by actively making my thoughts, my plans, my intentions, my calendar. If I were to say to you, what do you got planned this week? What's on your calendar? What are you going to do? We can love our God with this part of our heart by saying, everything that I intend, everything that I plan, every thought that comes into my mind, I'm going to submit it to God. Capture it by the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is what it is to be a follower of Christ and submit every part of myself to Him. Love the Lord my God with this part of my heart by taking capture every thought, every plan, every activity. The last part that they identified this morning was this idea that part of our heart comes the choices that we make. These are not completely separate. They're tied together, right? It makes sense that if the emotions and the feelings we have and the thoughts that we have, then certainly the choices ultimately that we're going to make is part of our heart. Jeremiah 29:11. We all know this verse. We memorize it at some point. For I know the plans I have for you, love to give you hope and a future. And usually we say, period. That's the end of that. But the passage goes on to say, God says to His people, you'll find me. We will connect. You'll understand me better when you seek after me with all your heart. And the question that's raised from the text is, what do I really want? What is it that I really desire? Now, there's a real base level to that question. I have financial goals. I have some tangible goals in terms of my career or my education. So I think setting goals is a great way to actually reach them. You can't reach a goal you never set, right? But the question underneath the question is, what do I really, really want? What is it that I desire the most? What is deeply rooted in my heart that I'm trying to get to? Starts really, really young. Please, Daddy, please. I love that puppy. Please, can we have him? I love that little puppy with all of my heart. Oh, absolutely. I have this deep emotional connection to this little thing. And I think about him all the time. I really want that. That's something I really, really desire. That thing doesn't go away from us over time. We just change the thing we get attached to. I set my heart on that goal, that promotion, that success, that financial goal, your first car, your next car, whatever it might be. How many of you are willing to admit that you walked in the door this morning and said, oh, I'd love to have a bike like that? Okay, I did, anyway. Felt good to ride it up and down the hallway a few times. I really loved that. Set something on your goal. Jesus said it this way, don't set your treasures here, because whatever things you treasure the most in your heart, whatever the things you set as your goals that are most important to you, they will set the direction of your heart. Where you treasure the most, that's where your heart is going to be. Psalm 37 says that we should trust in the Lord and take delight in what He does. Go ahead, put that on the screen. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. The point was made this morning in our worship that God is constantly in the business of blessing us. If we decide, in fact, I'd love to do this some Sunday, to just give us a heads up and say, hey, next Sunday, instead of a sermon, we are just going to tell story after story after story of God's blessing. You tell me what God's doing in your life and in your life and in your life. And we would fill the time easy. There would be no complaints that church was 2 hours that day, because we'd be hearing over and over and over again that God, this is what He does. That's His character, is it not? I mean, I don't think we could come in here and say, man, God was heavy on me. He's just been pressing down on me. God blesses. God restores. God heals. God brings new life. This is what He does. Psalm 37 says, take delight in that, and He will give you the desires of your heart. There's two ways that we can read that, and both are equally valid. Take delight in what God is doing, and He may very well bless you with that thing, that desire in your heart that you're chasing after. He may very well do that. In fact, my guess would be there'd be a number of us here this morning who could say, oh yeah, I've had that experience. I sought after something. I submitted it to God. It was a part of my thoughts. And so we prayed through, and God granted this. He brought that to fruition. There's another way this can be read, and that is that God will put the proper desires in my heart. So rather than me saying, this is what I really, really want, God, you have to answer me, because your word says that if I desire it, you'll give it to me. The other way to read this is this. When I set my heart on the things of God, He will place in my heart the desires for the right things. So God will grant me the desires of my heart. The heart is a complicated thing. This is hugely oversimplified. But if I'm going to love the Lord my God with all my heart, then I'm going to give Him the best of my time. Not my leftover time. Not what's left when I got all my other things done. But I'm going to give Him the best of my time. So long as He's giving me a beating heart and life to do it, He gets back the best of my time. I'm going to grab hold of my emotions and my feelings, and before I respond to them, I'm going to submit them to Him. I'm going to humble myself before my God. Let Him lift me up or set me down. He's done that too. When I submit to God how emotionally driven I am, He has often said to me, not now. Not until you get that under control. But I'm going to submit these emotions and these feelings to my God, because that's part of loving Him with my whole heart. And the things that are in my mind that I get locked on, the things that I think, I'm sure I'm right about this, I'm sure they're wrong about that, I'll make sure I tell them that they're wrong about that. Perhaps what I should do first is submit these things to my God and say, You determine whether I'm right or wrong. And as I consider the things that I desire, the choices that I make, I'll submit those to God. Now, we have a problem. This is neat little picture. I love the video they did. This is helpful. But we have a problem with this, and it's this. They identified in that video, out of Jeremiah, that the whole thing is corrupted. Every corner of it. My thoughts, and my emotions, my physical heart. How is my physical heart corrupted? Because we are a dying people. I'm working hard right now to better my diet and my exercise and whatnot, because I'm getting older. Some of you feeling the pain with me. But look it, my body's going to fail me. Our bodies are going to fail us. They're temporal. So there's a part of my physical heart that is corrupted I can't do anything about. We are not eternal beings in this state. And my thoughts, the things that I'm so sure of, how many of you have had this experience when you were just absolutely convinced, you knew this was right, only to find out a week later, a month later, 6 months later, I was actually wrong about that. I had no idea how wrong I was about that. Perfect picture of that is Paul himself. As Saul the Pharisee, he is committed to the Old Testament teachings. He knows it better than anybody. I mean, he is a passionate follower after God. And he finds out that he was 100% wrong in what he was doing. That when Jesus Christ entered his world, he found out that he was wrong. Now, there's a story they made reference to in that video about this. King David. And as king, you will be familiar, I'm sure many of you, with the story that he commits adultery with Bathsheba. And as that sin, the danger of it is going to come to light now, he's going to be confronted with it. Instead of just owning up to it and dealing with it, he uses his authority to send the woman's husband into battle, into the front lines of battle. And sure enough, the man gets killed. Now, how David considered that the problem was solved then is beyond me. But the scripture, the story seems to indicate that that was good enough as far as David was concerned. His friend Nathan comes to him and tells him a story about someone who even though he had everything, he wanted more. So he took something from somebody who didn't have hardly anything. And David's angered by the story, and he says, who is this man that you're describing, Nathan? Because he deserves to be put to death. Nathan says something just absolutely, hit a wall. He says to him, you are that man. You're the man I'm talking about. Now, here's the part of the story that I think to myself, It doesn't make any sense to me. David seems to be surprised by this information. Now listen, picture yourself as the king. Picture yourself as the one who has all the power and authority. And you've committed adultery, and then you use your position of authority to have this person put to death so that your sin would not be confronted. Do you not know about this? You know you've done something wrong, don't you? Terry, if that were you and you did that, you would know, would you not? If someone came to you and told you a story that made the point and then said, I'm talking about you, it wouldn't be a surprise, would it? Why is David surprised? Why is David caught off guard that this issue is about him? Because David had been deceived by his own heart. He thought that it was a gone thing. It was a done thing. He thought in his heart that it didn't matter anymore because his heart had deceived him. And so he writes something. Turn to me with Psalm 51 as we close out this morning. He writes something incredibly powerful as this revelation is made to him. These are the words, Psalm 51. These are the words of David after he had been confronted to say, look, this is you. You've done this horrible thing. You need to respond to this. And this is David's response to this sin that, quite honestly, he knew about all along, but because of the deceit of his own heart, he had forgotten. He says this in Psalm 51. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to the great compassion, blot out my transgressions, wash away all my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions. Do you hear in his writing that David is saying, this is not a surprise. I did know this all along. I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you only have I sinned and done what's evil in your sight, so that you prove right when you speak and justified when you judge. Surely I was sinful. What's it say in your text? At birth. From the day I was born, I've had this problem. I think it's just amazing that when David was confronted with this specific sin at this specific time, his response was, the problem started way before this moment. I was sinful from my birth. I've been infected with this broken heart. Surely you desire truth in the inner parts. You teach me wisdom in the inmost place. So clean me with hyssop and I'll be clean. Wash me, I'll be whiter than snow. Jump down to verse 10. Create in me, God, a pure heart and renew a steadfast spirit with me. Steadfast spirit just means help me stick with it, God. See, you and I, we don't need our hearts to be healed. We need an entirely new heart. And I don't bring this to you this morning to lay a heavy hand on you and say, we are a terrible people. What is wrong with us? We're just, everything you've been doing and thinking this week is all. I bring this reminder that we are born with a deceitful, corrupted heart, and we need it replaced. And until we get a handle on our depravity and on our dependency on God, we won't truly understand the nature of salvation. Because the nature of salvation is that even though I was born with this, God has given me a new heart. If I am a blessing, if you are a blessing to somebody, if there's any way in which someone can be encouraged by the love of God, through you, it's because God has planted a new heart in you. He has given us every portion of our heart and has renewed our entire heart. So let's take our entire heart and love our Lord with it. Let me pray.